International clearance. Welcome to episode 2 of season 2, or episode 12 of the series overall. Season 2 might just be the forever season. So it's just called episode 12, maybe, moving forward. We'll roll with that. I'm your host, Joe Walker. Well, co-host, because alongside me, as always, is Scully. How you doing?
Good afternoon. I like that you opened with a philosophical quandary. Like, you're there just milling to yourself for the listeners. You know, that shows that we're really deep thinkers, you know? Like, we really consider these things as we bring them to you.
Yeah, exactly. Firstly, big thank you to everybody that listened to our return episode last week. The messages have been very nice. The sharing has been much appreciated. And just nice to get back into the groove. It's like putting on a nice...
comfy, you know, pair of shoes?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Poorly timed right now. That's a reference to something I said about Roy Hodgson that was brought up in an interview with him, and he did not like that. But it was a compliment, Roy.
The shoes are starting to wear down, though.
There's a hole in them now.
This is coming just after the international clearance derby, Arsenal versus Palace yesterday. I was there. Joe was there. He was in the away end. I was in the home. I very much enjoyed my day. I'm guessing you did not so much.
I had the right hump. That's why I didn't come to you after. I had the right hump. I'd stormed off at 3-0 and was just like grinding my teeth. I come here to escape all that chat, Scully. I'm gonna move away from it.
Let's get on some international football.
Yeah, before we do, a salute. This is something we haven't done in so long. I almost forgot that we did it. If you follow us on social media, whether that's X, Instagram, or now TikTok, guys, didn't mention that in the last episode.
Jeez.
If you follow us on there, particularly on Instagram and X / Twitter, the day before an episode, we will put up artwork of our guests' sort of passport stamps, just indicating where they have played or managed abroad. And we will always salute whoever guessed first from the people that reply to those. So a salute to @ Regional Jerk on Twitter, aka Fobby Bermino, who guessed Peter Crouch last week.
Yeah, I saw that. I was thinking, that is very fair. I'm impressed. I'm always impressed if you can see two stamps and get it quick.
Maybe he'd Googled it. I always wonder that, but I don't hold it against him. He was quickest off the mark, so we'll salute you for that.
We believe you in good faith, I'm not going to lie. I'll take it at face value. If you say that you guessed it, I believe you guessed it.
Yeah, so congrats to him. We won't be doing it this week because our guest is a different kind of angle. We'll get on that later. Let's do some updates at the start of the show from some players we spoke about last week in that big catch-up and some new ones as well. Jadon Sancho, there was that worry I was worried that he might need some time to get reacclimatized with first-team football at the standard that we'd kind of expect from him going back to Dortmund. It took him 20 minutes to get an assist in his first game, and at the weekend of recording, he's won a penalty in their other fixture as well.
Which he wanted to take, but Fulkrug, he pulled rank. And I felt really bad for him. I was like, let the guy hasn't played football in months. Like, let him just have a penalty, bro. Like, come on, man. And do you know what it is? It's because he won it. If he didn't win it, I'd be like, oh, that's a bit selfish of him. He literally won the penalty, and you know that he hasn't got to play for ages. He's so excited about coming home. He'd be calling it a homecoming. Just let him take the pen. Let him get his confidence up. That could change the season. You guys are, I think Dortmund will be fighting for fourth, third or fourth at this stage. You got a bit of catch up to do. This is a player that you've got on loan for 6 months. Let him fight for his confidence, get it back up, and see how far you can really take it. Because it's either Bayern or Leverkusen winning the league, let's be fair. And you're out of it now. So your journey is to fight to see how high up the table you can get.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you, Jadon. Elsewhere in the Bundesliga, very, very big Tottenham theme on today's update with the Bundesliga. First of all, Harry Kane. So by the time of we were recording, Germany was on its winter break still. It's back. Harry Kane scored in the return game v Hoffenheim. And the good news keeps coming because he has been joined by his best bud. Eric Dier has joined Bayern Munich on loan to the end of the season with the option of a year extra, which will presumably just turn it permanent. The farewell video, the announcement of this move indicates it will be a permanent. And I think quite common now, you'll get a loan with an obligation to go later on. It's almost just like, this gets you out of here, this gets the move done quicker, and we'll do all the more complicated stuff later down the line, or in 6 months when that new TV money comes in and we actually have the capital to sort this. So Eric Dier, by the looks of it, is at Bayern on a permanent, mentally anyway. He's not been playing for Spurs, so he is absolutely buzzing, surely.
despite, you know, his performances and like actually if they're good or not. Let's call a spade, he's there because he's Harry Kane's mate and it makes Harry Kane feel more comfortable. And there is another player that we are going to talk about later in the show who has moved to a place and has not felt comfortable and has immediately left. And I'm sure Bayern do not want that for the massive investment they've just made on Harry Kane, who is loving life at Bayern. Everyone is really into this Leverkusen story. They're unbeaten so far in Bundesliga. I've seen this story so many times. I've seen it with Dortmund. I've seen it with Leipzig. Mm-hmm. And it goes, oh my God, plucky team battles Bayern for the league. And it goes to like the last 3 days of the season. And then, boom. Bayern will edge it.
They have their inevitability to them. That's yeah. just who they are.
Yeah. And I think if they manage to do that, it would be great for me, yeah, for the storyline, for Kane to move to Bundesliga and not get a title. Like, it's the funniest timeline. I also can't see it happening. And if he gets that title and he has his mate Eric Dier there, plus maybe another friend who might be joining them, then, you know, he could stay for a long while. He could stay for a couple of years and make them even greater than they already are. Even more inevitable, should I say.
Yeah, more on that other player in a sec. Eric Dier is 29 now. Tuchel has already come out and said that he will be there as a centre-back rather than a midfielder. I think they've had to kind of... I think Goretzka has played a lot of centre-back for Bayern and they'd rather have him in midfield. So it's interesting. Thomas Tuchel, does he miss the Premier League? Because the other player that he's going for is also English. Scully hinted at it there. Kieran Trippier is potentially joining Bayern Munich on loan from Newcastle United. Tempestuous time recently at Newcastle. However much of it is true or not, what is clear is that his form has kind of wobbled. From being one of the standout performers for them,
he was their best player 4 months ago.
Yeah, his form has wobbled significantly. And to then fall out of Newcastle, potentially into Bayern Munich, and certainly some more Champions League football, that's pretty impressive.
He could go down as a British all-timer fullback. I think Trippier is going to enjoy the Bundesliga. I don't want to be disrespectful about the Bundesliga, but it's telling that people like a 33.
He's 33, 34, yeah.
Yeah, Trippier can go there, desired. Dier, who's been having a rum old time of it at Tottenham, is going to get there, get games and look decent. I think the two of them will eat up ground in the Bundesliga. Sancho has not played for 6 months. Mm. And like you said, it took him 20 minutes to get back into the swing of things. It's a very different league, yeah? The pace and power that we're used to in the Premier League makes you a different beast in the Bundesliga. And I think those two players, Dier and Trippier, we're laughing at it now because, yes, we know the boys are back in town. They're there to make Kane feel happy, to feel comfy, yeah. But I also think they're probably going to love it there and they're going to do well enough to get game time and play. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I'll be watching the end of that season closely.
Yeah, at the time of recording, the sticking point with Trippier going is that Bayern are looking for an initial loan deal with an agreement to buy in the summer, which sounds like the deal they had with Eric Dier. Newcastle are kind of hoping for an outright sale because, well, Trippier's a very high earner for them because he was kind of the marquee arrival that sort of opened the door for everyone else, other talent to come in and kind of legitimise the project they've got going up there. But also Newcastle, there's been reports that they need a sale of first team players in order to kind of meet this PSL/financial fair play standards that are now being enforced quite hard in the Premier League. So Kieran Trippier looks to be the fall guy and we'll see if Bayern find a way to make it work. If not, I imagine there'll be somebody else that might bite similarly if they know that he's available, even at 33, because he's had a good time most places he's gone. Let's jump back to Saudi Arabia. When we were last on, we said that Jordan Henderson was looking to go or was interested in leaving.
I apologise for laughing. I just think there's parts of this story that are just so ridiculous.
So, the three-year contract he had with Al Ettifaq has been cancelled a few months into playing there. 19 games total. Essentially, the really favourable tax that would have got him some obscene numbers in Saudi Arabia, anywhere as high as like £700,000 a week, some of the highest reports were in terms of if the tax worked for him. He had to be there for 2 years to get access to that level of tax break. We now know he's not getting that. It then brought another problem with it. If he was to come straight back to England, it would complicate I don't know how much you know about non-dom status and stuff like
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you're a resident in Britain for 90 days, you've got to pay tax here on your whatever you're like earning for the year. So him coming back that soon would have brought a huge tax bill here on those earnings. So in order to avoid that, two things have happened. One, he has stayed abroad. That was why all the links you saw were abroad. The other thing he's had to do is defer the money that he was paid at Al Etifak. So he has not seen currently a penny of what he was paid. And if he has, it will be a nominal amount. The Telegraph sources claim he might not ever see the money at all. If his career plays out in a way that is unfavorable, where, because in the short term, he wants to go back to England, but unrestricted by these tax rules and stuff. So that might be the end of next season or something like that. I don't know. But in order for that to happen, he has just had to waive that money until further notice. And I say until further notice, that notice may not ever come. That's how crazy he was to A, get out of there, and B, try and hold on to that money. But it sounds like he's prioritized the football and his family in order to get out of there. Not even a day later, Steven Gerrard, who is watching this all on, must be reading all the articles, finding out all this information, talking to his accountant, said, no, thank you. Don't fancy any of that. So Steven Gerrard has signed a new two-year extension to his deal at El Etifak so that he gets all those shmoneys. You broke down where they were in the league and all that last week, and I let you do it.
Yeah.
You failed to mention that they haven't won since October and they are winless in nine. So,
well, no, because I was reading it off Google, so I could only see that they haven't won in five, you know, because it only shows the last five games. I didn't know it got them that bad.
Yeah.
But that is probably why he stayed. Imagine failing that badly as a manager. Let's be honest and be fair, yeah? You are winless in nine games. No wins since October, yeah? And they're rewarding you with a contract extension, which means more of this outrageous money and job security, so that even if you get fired, you can stay in Saudi Arabia for another year or two and then get all of that money, because they'll have to pay it to you, or at least half of it. I'm not going to begrudge him. Before I even get onto the awful, awful way in which his team is playing, I get it. Get your money.
If you've got to the point of being out there, you're there for the money, so secure the thing that gets you the money.
And let's be real, the managerial thing is probably not working out for you right now. It probably will work for you in a lower league team, apply your trade for a bit and work your way back up. But this is a good little cushion. This is a good little cushion. Earn it for 2.5 years, then be like, all right, wifey, we're going to this league, or I'm going to this league. I'll be able, with the money I've made in the Saudi league, I'll be able to fly to you in Liverpool every weekend by jet. Then we can do date night, and then I'll go back to work and I'll slowly get better to this managerial thing. It makes sense. It's just awful from both of them. Awful on Stevie G by being this bad of a manager that he's got to smash and grab this Saudi league money. And awful from Henderson, because you gave us a big moral talk about, you know, the importance of you going to the Saudi league and standing up for Western ethics in a place where, honestly, by the way, you have no place going to stand up for Western ethics. And then ran away after 6 months because it didn't work out for you. It was obviously complex. You wanted to play football at the top level. This is an offer that is really hard to say no to. I'm sure you got offered so much money. And let's be real, they made it look sexy last summer. Football culture is not built that quickly.
Well, this is sports washing rather than trying to build a football culture. So that's where, ultimately, that's always going to hit a brick wall. No one actually really, truly believes that it's going to build this empire over there for football. But yeah, Henderson, it's interesting. So he's joined Ajax, 2.5 year deal, only 120 grand a week now. But that, like, that's huge in the Eredivisie, by the way. Absolutely massive money in Eredivisie. His press conference, he was very gracious. He said, you're not going to have me here talking down on the Saudi Pro League if that's what you want. Ajax is a fantastic step to fall back on. There are 17 players under 23 in the Ajax squad. Like, it's just, they've burnt a load of money that was given to them on for Kudus and Anthony. That Sven Mislintat, a name you know well from Arsenal, absolutely set that money all on fire, buying a load of youngsters that aren't ready. So someone like Jordan Henderson coming in, his job is going to be to lead these guys through war, basically, and make them ready for the level that they need to be at.
Which we know, by the way, he's very good at. Despite how it ended in Liverpool, every player in the Premier League will tell you, Jordan Henderson, they say he is a natural leader. Ajax, by the way, from all of their terrible start and then being in a relegation battle, have already crept to fifth after like a run of like six wins. Okay. They are 6 points off fourth place, which gets them to at least Conference League. The reality is they're halfway through their season. They probably can't win the league now unless something drastic happens to PSV. But they could, if they really fought for it, they could genuinely finish second. He can make Champions League by next season again.
He is likely to make his Ajax debut this coming weekend. By the time we're recording, he's still waiting on a work permit. It will delay his start there. But as a quick crawl out of a situation you obviously didn't want to be in anymore, that's not bad, is it? Amsterdam.
Bruv, he's living life.
Yeah, we'll have more on his adventures in Amsterdam as they come. Elsewhere, Serie A, Ruben Loftus-Cheek's got 2 goals in 3 games. He scored in a 3-2 win at Udinese, which has actually been quite public for something else. There was the Mike Maignan racist abuse, but he scored in that game. And then Josh Doig, Scottish player, doing very well at Verona. All the reports for the last week or so about him going to Marseille, which would have been a massive move for him, getting into kind of Europa League territory. I think they played the Champions League this year, but that'll be aiming their aim next season. Verona blocked the move, though. I think they were trying to aim for particular money or a situation that benefited them, and it all fell apart. Verona wanted him to go to Sassuolo. They obviously had a deal in place, or there's a connection there, I don't know. And in the end, that's where he's had to go. He has now joined Sassuolo. And I looked and I thought, okay, is that a step up? No, they are 3 places above Verona in Serie A. It's a big step down from Marseille. I mean, living in Italy and playing there is fantastic. But in his heart of hearts right now, he's looking into the distance, thinking about Marseille and the south of France.
Oh, 100%. Marseille would be a beautiful place to live.
Yeah, the transfer is 5 million with a further 850k in add-ons. He's only 21. Italy love their defenders. And if he's impressing at that level, you know, maybe that bigger fee will come.
Welcome back to International Clearance. AFCON is underway. We told you we would be talking about that. We'd be referencing it. And that's permeating not just through some of the people we have on the show, but some of the news that we have to update you on. There is a whole wealth of players over there right now representing their motherland. So let's get started. Group A, and of course, you know Nigeria has a lot of British players, some of them that you support. Ola Aina over at Forest, Semi Ajayi at West Brom, Joe Aribo at Southampton, Bright Osei Samuel, who's at Fenerbahce. He was actually born in Nigeria, but he was raised in Woolwich.
And that's we still follow those rules. We're still you know.
Alex Iwobi, Fulham, Ademola Lookman, Atalanta, and Calvin Bassey, who's also at Fulham, born in Italy, funnily enough, but raised in Newham. Then we've got Equatorial Guinea, where Charles Ondo is over there, born in Spain, raised in London, playing for Huddersfield. And in Group B, we have Ghana, Antoine Semenyo, Bournemouth's very own, and Jojo Wollacott, who's at Hibernian. Group C, Cameron Junior Chamedu, over at Stoke City, Benjamin Elliott over in Reading. In Gambia, we have Abu Adams for Cardiff City, Ibu Toure, Stockport County.
We'll share the list reading. This list, when we were putting it together, was a lot longer than we realised. At one point, it did have where everyone was born, but it was taking so long that it's got abandoned halfway through it with only the kind of exceptions mentioned. So that's Group A, B, and C mentioned so far by Scully. But Group E, you've got Ryan Yambe of Derby, who is playing for Namibia. He was born there but moved to England aged 10. Group F, DR Congo have Grady Diangana, who was once of West Ham, got a big move to West Brom. He moved to England age 4, grew up in Woolwich. Zambia in that group also have Frankie Masonda, born in Bedford, now plays for Ayr United, Scotland. And in Tanzania, who we mentioned last week, that Sky write-up, Haji Mnoga and Ben Starkey did make the squad. Ben Starkey of Ilkeston Town, Haji at Aldershot on loan from Portsmouth. There are also two others. You've got Tarin Alarakia, I hope I've pronounced that right. He's at Welston in non-league. And then at Boreham Wood in the National League, you've got Mo Sagaf, who, born in Somalia, came to England in his teens. That's where we get on the border now of like honourable mentions. But I feel like given this list is that long, we might as well give him the honourable mentions, along with a few more. So we say Britain, but there's a couple of Irish representations too. Roberto Lopez, born and raised in Ireland, played for Shamrock Rovers.
This story is amazing.
He played for Cape Verde.
They shouted him on LinkedIn and he ignored it because the original message was in Portuguese, which he did not speak. So he was just like, oh, what's this? He must have thought it was a Portuguese job offer, ignored it. And then it was only because the Cape Verde manager went back and I thought, you know what? Let me type it in English just in case.
Thank so God.
He also, by the way, so I got into a bit of flack because I had a bit of a viral tweet this week. AFCON is my favourite tournament because it's such an equalising tournament. Yeah. You have legit bona fide Premier League superstars who are playing alongside some semi-pro ballers who have other jobs. Some people, especially Nigerian and Ghanaian fans, took that to offence. They're like, oh, most of our players are all pro leagues. They are pro footballers. They all play in the top leagues in Europe and all of this. Not everyone comes from Nigeria or Ghana. Like, a lot of these players play in other places. And there are players like Roberto Lopez, who was working in a bank when he was first scouted by Cape Verde. Like, and Cape Verde, by the way, were top of their group, which included Egypt and Ghana.
We're now two games into that group. They are the first team through to the knockouts because they beat Ghana in the first game in the last minute, which considered a shock. And then they absolutely hammered, I think, Mozambique after that.
Yep.
But that win over Ghana has put some pressure on the Ghana manager, who, let's not forget, is Chris Hughton, former Newcastle, Norwich, Brighton manager, Irish international, born in Forest Gate. He's not on a good run with them. And they did draw their next game, which was with Egypt, which was considered a decent result. A loss would have knocked them out. And basically, it's all on the next game. I think they have to just better Egypt's result in the last game. But, I mean, it's not great for Chris Hughton. Like, the first result was a shock. He was then attacked by a fan after that game as well. Like, it's really like, it's already at that point in that job, which isn't great for him. But as you say, no one ever turns up to that tournament and steamrolls it, despite having high caliber Premier League players in their team.
The thing about Ghana is they're chronic underachievers over the last few years in AFCON. Yep. And I think there's a bit of hubris around Ghana and Nigeria because they have so many stars in their squad, like name brand players who we know from top leagues. We expect, and they expect them to win most games because you turn up and, like I said, you're playing Cape Verde and you are literally playing against some electricians and bankers and you think, we are winning this game. But the reality is the infrastructure, maybe it's to do with like the time spent away. Maybe there's a disconnect. Other teams can beat you because PNP, let's be honest as well, is nullified in this tournament. So it doesn't matter. It's just not a thing. Team spirit is actually a huge thing. So if you have a lot of spirit and a lot of goal and you're playing for each other and you cover each other and press well, you can stand a great chance in AFCON. And yes, it is won by a lot of the same teams every few years, but there is always major upsets. Like that road to a Ghana or an Egypt or an Ivory Coast winning the tournament, it's always marred by a Senegal or a Nigeria or someone getting knocked out by a much smaller team, which is why the tournament is just so fun.
I think the first round of group stage games, I think like one game went as kind of bookies predicted, basically. Like almost all of them were upsets. It's that kind of tournament. It's one you want to keep an eye on. Sky Sports have been broadcasting the games. And it seems like the right time to have a guest who has experienced AFCON for himself and on the angle of a Brit that's declared for a country. Bevis Mugabe plays for Motherwell, formerly of Yeovil Town and Fulham Southampton Academies.
Southampton Academy, yeah.
He played for Uganda and born in Harrow, but Uganda is his national team and he's got well over a dozen caps. And he went to the 2019 African Cup of Nations with Uganda, which was in Egypt. Scully, how do you know Bevis?
So many ways. So it was a Ugandan who lived in Southampton for a bit. So right. There's that. But we had a couple mutuals, and being that he was from London as well, like that is kind of why that people are like, oh, do you know Bevis? Because he's from London and he's Ugandan. And then also, like, there is like an initiative for like, and I'm trying to not be facetious here, but Ugandans who are front facing and do public stuff, basically.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't want to say famous because some of us are not famous yet.
Yeah.
Namely me. Yeah. But a bunch of us Ugandans link up and we go to the Ugandan embassy and we talk about like initiatives we want to do and be involved in Uganda and how we can help support Uganda and like bring them forward in different ways, you know, like maybe we can help the tourism board, maybe we can put more infrastructure into football, all of this. And there's lots of people there, some of them that you will recognize, such as Rags Original, Daniel Kaluuya or Miss Banks, unknown T footballers like Bevis, and then there's me. So yeah, that's about it.
Nice. Well, yeah, thanks.
He's
to you,
good friend. Yeah, like big up Bevis, man. I'm really proud of him. Like, you guys are doing better and better. We're causing some shock upsets. I'm hoping he is a part of that and leads into that. Obviously, AFCON 2027,
plenty to talk about with him, plenty insight. This is Bevis Mugabe on International Clearance. Bevis Mugabe, welcome to the show, sir. Thank you very much for joining us.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me. It's much appreciated.
I'm delighted to have you on. We're really keen to get to know about your international experience. And I guess the place to start is, you know, you're coming up through academies. When did it enter your mind as an aspiring professional that, do you know what, if I put my mind to it, I might be able to play for Uganda?
It's always been in the back of my mind ever since I was a young kid, probably when I was at Fulham, later on in Fulham, my Fulham career. So probably around like 15, 16, where like my brothers, my cousins were all getting on to me, saying, hey, listen, Bev, you know, like you can be one of the first like from the UK to go out and actually represent Uganda. Like, of course, England was going to be there, but like everybody was pushing me to go play for my motherland. So that's when it first initially started for myself.
What was the process like? How did you make that call up?
The first interest that came in from the national team was probably when I was at Southampton in the youth team. And they called me up to play for like in a qualifier. I think it was AFCON qualifier as well. And I just thought at that time I was too young. Like, I think I was only like 18. I thought I wasn't really fully developed to play men's football. I've never played like a first team game in my whole career. So I think I was under Bobby Williamson. So I think that was just way too soon for me then. My first actual call up when I went was when I was 21. And yeah, that's when it just started and kicked on.
I've even got a note from that call up when you're 21. Can you talk me through this situation? Because I could try and fill in the gaps myself, but it's probably best coming from you. So you're at Yeovil Town and you get a call up, 21 years old. I'm seeing the time of it. It's August. So the season's just started. And the official story given by the coach at the time, the Sredijevic, is that Yeovil said it was a slightly too short notice a call up. Yeah. Is that him being a diplomat? Was there a bit of a conflict with your Yeovil management about you going at that time?
There was more of a conflict between my actual manager about me me accepting the call up and wanting to go. He clearly didn't want me to go at the time because the league was just about to like start up and needed his full squad to be there. And he just thought like kind of selfish of him, to be fair, but to a certain degree. And he just literally blocked it, if I'm being brutally honest with you. And of course, like it happens in football, like there's loads of policy that goes on in and around the game. But at that time, it was strictly him being a little bit, I'll say, selfish.
Were you worried that it would affect future call-ups? Because you're obviously got in your mind as to like what international football must be like and you want a taste of it.
Yeah, I think at that time it was a kind of difficult period for me because I've literally just left Southampton, left like reserve football, under 21s, under 23 football to step up into the men's game and actually try and get a career out of the game. So it was kind of like, do I accept this call? Or do I actually like start the season off well and like at least have an opportunity to actually have a career in football itself? So I think in a grand scheme of things, it kind of worked out for myself in this current situation.
You were playing at fullback at that time, right?
Yeah.
I know obviously you play centre half now. So did Uganda have you in mind as a fullback, or were they aware that you could play centre back at that point?
To be fair, I've always been like a centre half that could play right back. Right. But it just happened at Yeovil that I played quite a lot of games at right back and I'd done well there. So they would always like put me in between both, like centre half, right back. So when I first initially went to Uganda, I was a centre half. And then when I went to AFCON, I was playing right back because the manager just thought like I was a good like 1v1 defender. And like, he's like, yeah, just do that. You don't need to go and attack. All I want you to do is go back, stay back, defend your opponent, and that's it. That's all I want from you. Yeah.
How did it work? What's the setup? Is it come through your agent? Is it a LinkedIn message? Is it a football manager inquiry just going extreme?
Not really. I think with Uganda, when I first got called up, it was more like they just sent an email to the club saying, oh, they'd want to call up Bevis Mugabe to come between these 2 days. We've got these two friendly games. We've got these two qualifiers. And in between that, I'll be speaking to the manager anyway. So he'll be keeping tabs on me, saying, oh, like, how are you doing this weekend? Like, I heard that you played well or you didn't have a great game. Like, what was that your serve? What went wrong? What went well? So, like, you're always in communication regardless of what's going on. And then ultimately, they'll just send an email to, like, the FA. The FA will send an email to your club. And then that's when you get your call up.
Nice. So you have that situation at Yeovil where you can't go for that particular round of games.
Yeah.
I think you're unlucky because then the following year, 2017, which I've kind of looking into it. So obviously AFCON's at the start of 2017.
Yeah.
So because of those round of games, you probably don't make, that's why you don't make the cut for the squad, really.
Pretty much.
It's immediately followed by the African Nations Championship in that summer, which is like local based players only.
Yeah.
So you can't be in that. And then at the back end of that year, 2017, there's the kind of East and Central Africa tournament, which again, so almost sort of 18 months later before I get another shout here, are you just having communication that's reassuring you that I'm going to get my moment at some point, or are you starting to worry?
I'd say I was always confident I was going to get back in sooner or later, because I just thought as long as I do well for my club, like, they can't not call me up, you know what I mean? Yeah. They have to call me up at some point if I'm performing well. And, like, the numbers don't lie. Like, if I'm playing these amount of games and putting these numbers up and playing well each week and week out, they'll come back sooner or later. So it's more of just, like, I can maybe crack on with my club side. And then, hopefully, fingers crossed, they'll come calling up again. But if they don't, then at least I've tried my best to get back in.
And there's been a change of coach at that time as well. So that kind of dialogue you were having previously is gone. So it's gone. I just got, all you can do is play good football, right?
Yeah. Literally.
So that there's two friendlies in March 2018. That's Sao Tome and Principe and Malawi, both at home.
Yeah.
So that first few days meeting up at camp, at that time, were you the only British-based player? Often teams meet up at, they'll share the same flight and stuff. So were you just on your own?
I was on my own, just going into no man's land.
What was that like? What's your Luganda like?
I can understand it, but I can't particularly speak it well. But when I go back, like, it always starts coming back to me, then I can start having small conversations.
Okay. So it wasn't too bad. Like, when people are shouting on pitch and stuff, you're getting what they're saying. Okay, cool. So when people calling for it and all of this, you're active. All right, cool. What was it like in their perspective, though, like, communication-wise?
It's different, definitely different than obviously just, like, moving to a different club and then starting in a new change room and trying to earn the respect of your fellow teammates. But for, like, international football, like, you're literally there by yourself. Like, I don't really know anyone. Normally, like, in the UK, like, you go to another team, you might know of someone and you can start a little bond there. But, like, literally going into the unknown, I'm still young at the time, and just trying to build relationships. To be fair, like, everyone was really, really welcoming because they saw that, oh, this guy eats my talking. Like us. I could relate to them. I grew up in a Ugandan household, so I eat exactly the same food as you guys eat. So, like, they kind of accepted me straight away when I obviously started to integrate myself into the squad. So for me personally, it was an easy transition. Like, there's other players that have come from the UK, I've gone into the Ugandan stuff and struggled because they don't really particularly eat, like, the Ugandan food, or they're not really familiar with the Ugandan culture, and it's been a struggle for them. So in that sense, I was lucky because they embraced me straight away.
So culturally, it wasn't too tough to really see them. And when you went back to play, because obviously, like Joe said, those games are at home. Did you get a chance to, like, go see your gran, your jaja? Like, did you get to bring family members to games?
Of course. I had to go see my jaja straight away. My cousins that I've got in Uganda. So, like, it was a proper family affair. Like, it was, my heart was warm. Not going to lie, it was very warm.
That's beautiful.
And, like, to see, like, the happiness that it gave my mum, especially. And she's like, oh, Bevis, like, everybody won't stop calling me about you going to Uganda and representing us. Like, their phone was just blowing up more than mine, to be honest with you. And just seeing the happiness that it brought my family members was special. Very, very special.
That's beautiful.
Did they eventually get an opportunity to come and join you on one of those trips, or, you know, kind of double up on a family visit, but also, like, I'm talking about people here?
I think the main one was when I played in the 2019 AFCON in Egypt. My brothers flew out and actually stayed for the whole tournament and, like, obviously came and supported me throughout the games, which is special for them. And to see me playing, like, in a major tournament was It's great. It's like I'm real. Like I'm just a small guy, just a normal guy from London playing in AFCON. Like it's crazy. So that experience was definitely one for the memory books.
That AFCON, right? So by the time you get your call up and you're able to go, this is March 2018, less than a year before that AFCON kicks off. So you're aware that there's a window of opportunity to make your place, but it is a small window nonetheless. Coming out away from that first visit, those two friendlies, did you come away feeling like, okay, I can make that tournament?
It was a weird situation because the new manager came in and I've had a few conversations with him and I was playing for Yeovil at the time and we'd just been relegated from League Two. So I was like, oh, I don't know. But I was playing well though. I was like really playing like really good football, but we just couldn't manage to get over the line. So I was speaking to him. He's like, yeah, like I want you to come for the training camp for AFCON. And if you do well, then you're going to be in my team. I know what you can do. I've seen you play. I've seen your clips. I've been following your games. And if you come, stay fit and you do well, then you're going to be a part of my squad. So I was a bit taken back. I was like, I was very surprised when he said that to me. So, I just went over, done the training camp, probably the hardest preseason I've ever done for like any type of tournament or season, and managed to get into the squad, which was a blessing.
Amazing.
That's in Abu Dhabi, right? That training camp.
Yeah.
A weird pair of fixtures. So like, pre-tournament, you play a team that's in another group, and I guess you do with, Ivory Coast that you play, which is quite, as caliber of opponents go, that's kind of the top tier, right? You also play Turkmenistan. So what's the contrast in levels there? How are Uganda faring up against Turkmenistan? Because I don't think I've ever seen them play.
Yeah, it was a strange one because we played Ivory Coast and them. To be fair, it wasn't really about the opponents, more about what the manager wanted from us and us implementing it. And we've done that on both occasions. We both beat both teams. Obviously, people were surprised that we beat Ivory Coast.
You've been coming up against Zaha and Pepe, no?
Yeah, we played against... All of them were playing. All the big guns were playing, literally. All the big guns in every league. La Liga, Prem, all of them were playing. And it was weird because they kind of looked down on us. Because us Ugandans, like, we're not really tall, big people in general. And if you're in a tunnel, all these guys are like my height, wide. And they're looking at us, like all of us are like 5'6", 5'8". Like not that tall at all. And we beat them comfortably, to be fair.
Are you told at that camp that I like what I saw, you're going to be in the squad? Or was it a little bit of a delay close to the time?
No, by that time, I knew that I was going to be a part of the squad, to be fair. Like, I already had the conversation and he said, yeah, you're going to be playing right back. I played right back in that tournament. And he just said, yeah, I just want you to defend. That's your job. That's it.
In terms of general expectations of the team, of the squad, what kind of point in the tournament would have been seen as success? Was it just like getting out of the group or was it further than that?
I would say for Uganda, getting out of the group would be an achievement in itself, big achievement, which we managed to do. And I feel like all of us were very confident that we'll do that, just the way that we prepared and the way that the manager actually organised us and set us up to play. And I think we caught a lot of teams off guard in that group stage as well, to be fair. So it kind of it worked out for sure.
Yeah, so you've had the home friendlies. You've had this training camp, which in terms of atmosphere, I can imagine there probably were some people in attendance, but it was quite a different kind of dynamic.
For sure.
To then step out in a major tournament in Egypt, you play the hosts, which is probably, I think that's the last game of the three, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the atmosphere must have been just like, is that the craziest game you've played in atmosphere-wise?
Probably up there for sure. Because literally, it's just Egyptian fans everywhere. Full house, like, just Rams. Everyone screaming, Mo Salah, like, everything. It was going off, to be fair.
What side were you playing on that tournament? Were you defending against Mo?
That's the only game that I actually didn't play. I was on the bench that game.
Okay.
So I was kind of gutted at the same time. I was like, oh, man, this would have been unreal to play it. Like, come on, man, just let me get a little 5 minutes at least.
You definitely got it, but also you might have got some PTSD.
Yeah,
so
you know,
swings and roundabouts.
It's true. Yeah.
But I guess you're on the bench for that because Uganda win their first game against DR Congo, which is a massive result. I guess at that point, any kind of talk and belief within the camp just escalates another level where it's like, that's the result we need to get out of the group if we know we need to progress, really.
Pretty much, yeah.
And So, like, how's the vibe at that point? Like, once you know that you're through, what's the feeling?
The vibes are high. The vibes are through the roof. That was the big achievement by itself, to be honest, to just get out of the group and just someone seeing who you're going to play, like, in the next stage of the tournament, and just having that, like, kind of excitement and nervous feeling going into the next game was, like, it was special.
I think one thing that the rest of the world sees at major tournaments, like a World Cup.
Yeah.
Pre-match, no one is more relaxed and kind of enjoying themselves than African teams. It's like their way of kind of just dispelling tension.
Yeah.
With the singing and dancing. We've seen it now with AFCON. Did that squad, did they apply that same kind of thinking, or because of the coach, was it different?
No, exactly the same, to be fair. Exactly the same. Music, people dancing, vibes. That's just the way that obviously African people like to release their energy. So, it was exactly the same feeling when we actually found out that we were going to be in the next stage of the tournament. Everybody was just happy, loud music blaring in the change room, or the coaches at the hotel, like non-stop vibes, to be honest.
As a fan, I thought it was a new dawn for Ugandan football, I'll be honest. Mm. When we beat Congo that week, you couldn't talk to me. I was like, yeah, we've arrived. It's going to be different now. It's going to be different.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Still hoping, still praying.
Always.
How much are you gauging at that point, or even just during the tournament generally, of how it's being received in Uganda or the rest of the continent? Like, are you quite sort of self-contained wherever your training camp, the hotel is? Is it all kind of quite insular, or are you having lots of correspondence with people outside? Like, how much are you across what's going on?
Yeah, we're very aware of what's going on, especially back home in Uganda. Obviously, we've got all of us have got family there, so we're always in communication and finding out what's going on. People are happy, like, people are excited, people are on the streets and, like, enjoying themselves, watching the games, especially going out of the group. People are out celebrating. To know that you brought them people happiness is, like, it's crazy, to be honest with you. Crazy.
You eventually eliminated by Senegal in the round of 16. And again, it's like the caliber of players we're talking here. It's no disgrace. Like, who was your one-on-one that day?
Sadio Mane. It's an easy one.
There you go. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no disgrace to lose by one goal to that team. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Not at all.
It doesn't feel like that in the moment, though, does it? I bet you were. Like, how did you feel?
Like, I was gutted, but, like, I wasn't, because I knew that what we achieved for such a small country and, like, doing more than we should have, to be honest, in that tournament was like, I felt like it was a building block for us to work on, if you know what I mean, just to make that little step up and gradually keep on improving. That's what it felt like. Playing against, like, teams or them type of players, like Sadio Mane. I played with him at Southampton as well, so it was nice to see him, like, in that tournament as well and actually play against him.
Did you get the opportunity to have a kind of hero's welcome? Because I suppose you just have to go straight back to the UK. What was the gap?
Like, everybody went back to Uganda after the tournament just to, like, get the heroes, you know, welcome and stuff like that. But I had to go back to the UK straight away because I had to kind of sort out where I was going to play next. So I was like, because I was out of contract. I didn't have a contract. I didn't have a play. I didn't have a club at the time. So I was like, I can go back to Uganda and have a holiday, but then life does go back to normal. So I have to kind of figure out where I'm going to be next. So I just went straight back to the UK to sort out my next club situation.
Did you get different kind of offers come in at that point?
Yeah.
Was there interest off the strength of that?
Yeah, there was a couple of clubs in, like, Egypt and other clubs within Africa that was in talks with them that wanted to, like, sign me. But I thought, I think I'm still at a good age to just stay in the UK and just see what I can do there rather than just make that step up abroad. I think it'll be a bit too much for me at the time.
Then after that, it's another couple of years. I mean, that year, January 2019, I think you have 8 caps in total.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in there, Johnny McKinstry comes in, who has managed several nations around the world. I think he's managing in Kenya now. Then there's a bit of a gap. Is that strictly COVID, or is there other kind of factors in there?
Yeah, that's strictly COVID, to be fair. Literally. There's no way I could travel at all. So, that was it, to be honest. Just COVID and just timing.
As other fixtures that they're playing, you know, they're getting into, like, World Cup qualifying campaigns. Is it just super frustrating just watching on, knowing that, like, I probably could have helped get them over the line in that game? And
yeah, definitely, because it was kind of close. And I knew that, like, I could help, even if it's just, like, through my experience of playing in, like, an international tournament, like, I can hopefully make a little bit of a difference. So it was kind of, it was upsetting at moments, but I was like, oh, like, during the international break, so I should be there, like, I can be there, like, I should be there, at least trying to help, at least. But the situation was a situation, I really couldn't do anything about it.
The World Cup qualifying's really tough, like, particularly with African sides. I was looking, so that qualifying, you're able to go back over 2021, you play against Kenya, you play against Mali. It's super tight. You finish second in the group, but you essentially have to win the group to make the playoff round.
Yeah.
And I guess looking at the results, it was like, I think there's that defeat to Tanzania that effectively...
Yeah, pretty much.
Kills it, really.
Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that would be considered like, that's more of a derby, right? Yeah. Tanzania, Uganda?
Big derby, yeah. Strong.
Neighbouring countries.
Mm. Yeah. How many of those kind of fixtures have you played in for Uganda? I can see that you played in an Ethiopia fixture, which is not too far away.
Yeah.
That's away in Ethiopia. What was that kind of atmosphere and like energy like?
That wasn't too bad because I think that was a friendly, I think.
Yeah,
it was a friendly. So the atmosphere wasn't too hostile, to be honest with you, because it was a game, but I didn't really have much meaning towards it. A World Cup qualifier, you can feel the tension within the stadium for sure, 100%.
Well, there's an Algeria away fixture for about 2 years ago. I can imagine that one being in that kind of category.
Yeah,
and then also your previous cap, the most recent one, away at Somalia, although that's not in that was played in like Morocco or something.
Morocco.
I watched that game start to finish. I've watched a few of these games. I watched Senegal game, like, and I didn't want to interject and say I watched every game that was played. But the Somalia one really hit me. That was like, I've got a lot of Somali friends, so that was like, there's a couple of games like the Congo game. Internationally and nationally for Uganda, there's certain games that are derbies, like Tanzania, like Kenya, Rwanda. Sure. You play those games big. Yeah, and there's some that are local derbies in terms of like the UK and where UK, your friends are from. And like playing Congo is a big game. Playing Somalia is a big game. That Somali game, the group chat was so silent afterwards. Like, they were so confident. And then that win, nobody would reply to any message I put in there for like 4 days. It was just radio silence.
Big time. It was the same for me, to be fair, because I've got quite a few Somali friends as well, so I was getting a lot of heat and tension, so it was funny.
Traveling for away games and stuff, has there been any kind of experience with you that you weren't willing to accept, you know, fireworks outside the hotel, that kind of stuff? But were you able to kind of keep your focus always?
I've never actually experienced anything like wild, like my coach getting like attacked or fireworks outside my hotel room. Everything's been pretty smooth. I'd say the only difficult part for me is just the actual traveling from the UK to Africa can be a bit long and time consuming and fatiguing as well, especially when I've just played a game on a Saturday and then I have to like train or get on a flight on a Sunday morning or Sunday evening to start training again and then play on a Tuesday. That can take a bit of a toll on the body. And it's hard to
know. Nana special.
Yeah, it's not easy.
He's currently suffering from that.
He's suffering as we speak.
There has been a growing contingent, you mentioned touching it earlier, of British born players playing for the Ugandan national team. Has that helped with those trips that you do have some sort of extra solidarity there and people you can at least like and talk to, but in that whole kind of back and forth?
Definitely. I guess it makes it easier for myself, especially for other players that are born in the UK and making that transition to play for Uganda and knowing that I'm going to be there. I guess it makes it easier for them as well because obviously I can relate to them from the UK standpoint of view and obviously trying to integrate them into the team and getting the other like teammates to kind of accept them as well. So it kind of makes it easier for both parties.
The travelling, have you had like a Wednesday fixture and then had to be back for a Saturday, 3 o'clock? Yeah.
Probably have to be fair. Like a Wednesday game, then having to travel back, train Friday and play on a Saturday. I've had that before. And that was difficult to get the body going again. Because the older you get, the more your aches and pains, it's different. It's different.
I don't know what you're talking about. We're baby boys. Are management sympathetic for those kind of things? Is that a concern in your back of mind sometimes?
Not really, to be fair, because I know I look after my body. And with Scotland, you obviously get international breaks, so it's actually a lot easier. But sometimes down south, if you don't play in the Prem or the Champ, like, they don't have international breaks, so it's a lot difficult to actually go and represent your country. So I think it's easier having obviously that official international break where obviously quite a few of my teammates are international as well. So quite a few of us are going out and flying to different countries, which makes it a bit easier for the manager to obviously be okay with it.
I want to look ahead to the future just before we get out of here. Obviously, so we talked about beating Somalia, lost to Guinea, but there is the World Cup to look ahead to. How do you think the route's going to go? Is the belief still strong?
The belief's always strong. The belief's
yeah,
always
I love
strong.
That.
Yeah, always, always. If you don't believe, then what have you got? What are you doing it for? There's no
True.
Point. So I'm going in just like, just why not? There's no rules in this world. Like, why can't we qualify for a World Cup? Why can't we? So as long as we just win our games and tick our boxes, then why can't we be there? And if we were to do that, that would be another great achievement to do. So I'm excited.
And there's AFCON 2025 as well.
If you look beyond that, you've got AFCON 2027. If you're still in good shape, maybe.
That's how I was thinking.
Which is
Uganda
co-hosting AFCON 2027.
Yeah. Nah, you'll like, be able to do it, man. That's only what? That's 3 years away.
3 years. Yeah, I can make that. Yeah. I can make that.
Yeah, man.
For
look
sure.
after 100%. Your legs. Yeah, 100%. Man. We're trying to be out there. I've already offered Joe that he can stay at mine.
You can
stay
at mine if you want. I've got you.
Yeah, we can't visit you.
Please.
Yeah. Be careful. We might cash that offer, but you've got to be careful. Like, it's not happening. Because, yeah, that's kind of the kind of dream combination of the major tournament experience. And because you're going to have crazy home crowds. You're going to really feel like you're in amongst it. That would be sick.
Yeah, that's fun to look forward to for sure.
I'm excited to introduce Joe to Motoke. It's going to change his life.
It's going to change your whole world.
Yeah. Right? Listen, it's an experience.
100%.
Okay, before we wrap up, I guess we'll, in terms of international duty with Uganda, what are the kind of do's and don'ts? What are the like essentials you have to bring for when you're traveling? What are the things you can't forget? What are the things that are essential?
Essential that I would say, always put your boots in your hand luggage. Don't put them in your hold to check in. Because the one time I went to, I don't know who we were playing, I packed my boots in my suitcase and my suitcase went missing. And now I'm going to go to camp. So literally the worst situation, my suitcase arrived like the day of the game. So I was lucky. So from that experience, I just always put in my hand luggage. Boots, shin pads, that's literally all I need to have to camp. That's it. All the rest is a bonus.
Are you ever under pressure to bring any stuff back?
Yeah, definitely. Always. Like, they always, like, I want a shirt of some sort, or is there anything really I can really help out with? Like, I just try my best to just supply that.
Okay. It's so funny. I would never ask you for that. I'm ordering my shirts online. Like, I need Waraji. I need full-strength Waraji. That's what I need to bring. I'm going to come back. Yeah. People are asking for the wrong things.
Literally.
I should probably explain to the listeners that Waraji is like... It's a very strong Ugandan alcoholic drink. It's like, it is a type of gin, but it doesn't taste like a gin and it will mess up your head. And you can only buy it in Uganda and very, very select places in the UK. When people bring it back, it's really hard to get a hold of, which is why I'm saying to Bevis that if anyone goes to Uganda, that's the only thing I ask for. Everything else you can find online, like that's the only thing you can't. When Uganda starts selling that, like exporting it, I think it will actually change the country economically. 100%. But no, it's been a pleasure to have you, man. Like, honestly,
thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
I get very proud watching you do your thing. And like growing up, like Uganda were rarely ever getting into international tournaments. We've had a bit of a lull. And then like in the last like 8 years, I'd say, we're making our way back. We're definitely building our way back up. And you're definitely a big part of that. So thank you for the hard work.
I appreciate you a lot, man. I appreciate you.
Okay, big thank you to Bevis Mugabe for his time. Being at AFCON sounds like a lot of fun. Obviously, he was there with concentration and trying to get the job done and achieve as much progress as Uganda could in that tournament. But the kind of contrast between club football and then going to that sounds like a lot of fun, and it must be very, very addictive.
I honestly cannot even fathom how great it must be to put on that jersey and run out onto the pitch and come up against players like Mo Salah and Sadio Mane. Like for your country, like I'm getting both a sense of pride and envy that is bubbling up. Big him up. Thank you so much, Bevis, for joining us.
Another great guest to start this season going. Our first proper one, if you like. I did think we were going to get pulled up for the Peter Crouch being 5 minutes, but...
yeah. People enjoyed it, man. 5 minutes with Crouchy. How can they hate? How can they hate?
There you go. So we're definitely making it up to you this week with that Bevis interview, I hope. And we got a few more in the tank. Don't you worry about that. We're getting closer to the end of the transfer window, but there will be more updates. We'll have plenty for you next week, as well as that guest interview. And we want to hear from you, as always. Scully, how can everybody get in touch?
Well, you can reach us at INTL clearance, yeah, shorthand, INTL clearance at gmail.com. Our social media handles are the same. So that's TikTok, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter. INTL clearance. That's it. International clearance. Come and find us. Come and talk to us. Let us know who you would like us to get on the show. If you can have someone you have want to suggest, maybe you have a friend and they played out in Iceland, somewhere in Indonesia, or wherever in the world. Let us know. DM us, email us, whatever it is. Maybe you have a question you want to ask us. We're not shy to read out comments, all of this good stuff. So please keep listening, keep recommending it. Follow, subscribe, all of that good stuff. Leave a review.
It's an exciting time ahead, so make
sure. It's going to be a good season.
We've got more like this for you every week rolling, so don't miss any of it. Thank you very much for joining us this week. I've been Joe Walker.
And I've been Scully.
And that was International Clearance.